This is an NBC News hotline report. President Johnson has held a surprise news conference at the White House. The conference ended a short time ago. Mr. Johnson touched on the nation's economy, giving statistics and testimonials from the business world, challenging charges by Arizona Senator Goldwater that the administration is physically irresponsible. Now by recording from the White House in Washington, D.C., the President of the United States.
I have an announcement and some appointments that I make, and then I'll be glad if you desire to follow up with any questions to attempt to answer them. With the passage of the Foreign Assistance Appropriation Bill on July the 1st, the House of Representatives completed its work on the regular 1965 appropriation bills, all of them. I want to express my appreciation and that of the nation for the efficiency and the speed with which the House acted upon the 1965 budget. Not in 4 years has the House completed its work on the regular money bills as early as the first day of the new fiscal year. We owe a special debt of gratitude to the members of the House Appropriations Committee who labored long hours to meet a tight schedule and to the two forceful and effective leaders of the committee, late Congressman Cannon and his distinguished successor, Congressman Mahon. The scorecard of House action on the regular 1965 money bills shows a total reduction from the budget request of 3% as compared with a reduction of 7 4/10% last year. The size of the House reductions, less than half as deep as last year, is welcome confirmation of our belief back in January that we were submitting a budget that would be hard to cut. When Congress completes its action on the budget, we're going to look upon the appropriations as a ceiling, not as a mandate to spend. Wherever we can get by with less money than Congress has given us, we're going to do just that. The money we save through our drive to improve management and to cut costs will return to the Treasury next June. Within a week, or I hope most 10 days, I want to announce the final figures for the fiscal year which ended June 30th. Some early and incomplete reports on expenditures, the deficit, government employment, lead me to hope that I will have some good news for you at that time. I have a brief statement on the mid-year review of the economy that has been gone over with the Council on Economic Advisors yesterday. At mid-year, we have all seen many glowing reports on our recent economic advances in employment, sales, profits, and income. In this mid-year review, let us look at these advances in human terms. What do they mean to people? You'll have a copy of this available to you if you care to use it when you leave. First, more jobs. Today, 1,200,000 more people have jobs than 6 months ago. 1,600,000 more people are at work than a year ago. Two, higher wages. Average weekly earnings in manufacturing hit a new high of $103 in May. $3.74 more than a year earlier. Higher profits. Great gains in profits are being translated into rising investments and new highs in the Dow Jones average of stock prices. The Dow Jones average of stock prices were around 700 when we came in November 22nd. They're now 840 plus. Rising dividends for the country's nearly 20 million stockholders. These dividends are 11% higher in May than they were last year. A year earlier. Bigger incomes. The tax cut and prosperity are boosting incomes to new peaks. The estimated after-tax incomes of the American people in the second quarter of this year, which had just ended, were running at a rate of about $19 billion above the fourth quarter of last year and $30 billion above a year earlier. And this is a very important fact for all of us, and one that we can take a great pleasure in observing. The average American family of four has gained about $500 of annual income after taxes in the past year. A rate of advance matched only once before in America's peacetime history, in 1948. Family of four gained about $500 of annual income after taxes in the past year. Stable prices, number five. These gains were not eaten away by inflation. The wholesale price level is right where it was a year ago and 3 years ago. And it's lower than 6 years ago, which is quite a remarkable record. Consumer prices in May were only 0.2% above December and 1.5% above a year earlier. A special news note on retail sales in June, the advance report on the whole month seasonally corrected. Sales maintained the strong May rate, despite a few apparently slower weeks, and were 6.2% above last June. Retail sales in the week ending July the 4th spurted up 11% above the comparative week a year earlier. Now looking ahead, we look for continued strong gains in the second half of the year as the benefits of the tax cut flow through the economy. This is partly based on surveys of 1964 business capital spending plans, which now show a rise of nearly $5 billion, or 12% above 1963. Consumer spending surveys, which show buying intentions near a record high. Even more impressive is the calm confidence that we find in the consuming public and the business community. People know that times are good and that they're getting better, and they're responding by consuming wisely, investing soundly, and showing restraint in price and wage policies. There is a growing response to the challenge of cooperation and respect for the public interest on the part of business in setting prices, and unions in pursuing wage increases, and workers and managers in finding ways to raise efficiency and to cut costs. In that spirit, the economic horizon will be bright not only in 1964, but I am informed by the Council of Economic Advisors as far as the trained eye can see, into 1965. I have a brief statement by the on the auto negotiation. The auto industry is one of the nation's largest industries and plays a significant role in our national economy. The importance of the current auto negotiations is obvious. The results of this collective bargaining will have a profound impact upon our future price stability and therefore on our economic prospects at home and abroad. The negotiators in autos are on both sides are experienced and responsible men. They do not want governmental intervention in these negotiations, nor do I. We are of one mind that the collective bargaining process should be conducted and completed in accordance with the pattern of free collective bargaining that we are determined to maintain in this country. I am confident that the parties to the auto negotiations, by free, private, collective bargaining, will work out a responsible settlement consistent with both their private needs and their public responsibilities. A settlement which will reinforce and extend the excellent non-inflationary record which has characterized our vigorous economic expansion. Mr. Bertrand Harding is being appointed today as Acting Commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service.
What's his name
again, sir? Bertrand, B-E-R-T-R-A-N-D, Harding, is being appointed today as Acting Commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service. Mr. Harding is a 23-year veteran of the Federal Service and a recipient in 1962 of the National Civil Services League's Award for Top Career Achievement. I am completely confident that Mr. Harding will carry on in an efficient and fair manner the work of the Internal Revenue Service. I have today designated Mr. Michael Forrestal to replace Mr. William Sullivan as chairman of the Interdepartmental Committee which supports the U.S. country team in Vietnam. Mr. Forrestal, the son of the late Secretary of Defense, Mr. James Forrestal, will work under the supervision of Secretary Rusk. As you know, Mr. Forrestal has been associated with the Staff Security Council here in the White House. This is a further step in the series of appointments which have been made in support of Ambassador Taylor. I intend to appoint Mr. Lucius D. Battle, the Assistant Secretary of State for Educational and Cultural Affairs and a career Foreign Service Officer, as United States Ambassador to the United Arab Republic. He will succeed Mr. John S. Badeau, who is assuming the position at Columbia University. The background biographical sketch will be available to you in the press office. I'm announcing today two additional members of the National Food Marketing Commission. Mr. Albert K. Mitchell, a distinguished businessman and expert in certain aspects of food marketing. Mr. Mitchell is Republican National Committeeman from New Mexico. I'm also appointing the commission Mr. William M. Batten, B-A-T-T-E-N, president of the J.C. Penney Company. Mr. Batten has had a broad background in retail trade, and I'm sure he'll make a valuable contribution to the work of this commission. Mr. Batten is a Republican, although the statute does not require a membership in either party. We are trying to make appointments from both parties. As of now, we have two Democrats, Judge Jones and former Congressman Marshall, who's a dirt farmer in Minnesota, and two Republicans, Mr. Mitchell and Mr. Batten. I'm also pleased to announce my intention to appoint Mr. Manuel Cohen as chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission. Cohen, C-O-H-E-N. When Mr. William Carey, the present chairman, leaves that position later in the summer. Mr. Carey plans to leave as soon as we complete action on certain legislation pending. Mr. Cohen, who is now a member of the commission, has an enviable record in the securities field and outstanding reputation at the bar. I know that he shares completely my own philosophy of regulation, which is to be fair and equitable, applying the law with vigor and common sense. I look forward to an era of creative leadership in the Securities and Exchange Commission under Mr. Cohen. I'm also appointing to the existing Democratic vacancy on the SEC Mr. Frank Wheat of California. Mr. Wheat is a distinguished member of the California Bar, chairman of the Los Angeles Bar Association's Committee on Corporations, and a member of the American Bar Association Committee on Federal Regulation of Securities. Mr. Wheat is a cum laude graduate of the Harvard Law School and a graduate of Pomona College. Mr. Wheat is married and has three children and is currently practicing law in Los Angeles. I'd be glad to have any questions.
Mr. President, can you tell us anything about Mr. J. Edgar Hoover's mission to Mississippi, what he's down there for? Is he down there in... there's been some speculation that there might be a break in the making on these three missing civil rights workers, or is he down there just to coordinate the overall FBI program?
The information I have on Mr. Hoover's visit is that he has recently added additional FBI personnel to his force in Mississippi, some additional 50 agents, that he has... after survey of the situation, decided that he should establish a headquarters office in that state, that he has transferring a director from out of state to an assistant director to take charge of that office, that they've made arrangements for the new office to be open, and that he will officially open it sometime today. I'm told that while he was there, he will confer with the responsible people from his service who have been stationed there for some time and get a complete report and give any instructions that he may think indicated to the people under his jurisdiction.
Mr. President, the Attorney General said recently that the only thing he has going for him, the vice presidential nomination, is the fact that the big city bosses in the North, the party bosses in the North, are for him. Do you think this is a factor in his favor in getting the nomination?
I think that the delegates to the convention, after they nominate the president, will act on the vice presidential nomination, and I plan to make recommendations to them in that connection, as is customary, if I am the nominee. And at that time, I believe the convention will select the man that is available, who has the best qualifications to occupy the office of vice president and president, if he should be called upon to do that.
Mr. President, do you plan to see Mayor Daley of Chicago when he's in town today?
Yes, I understand.
Would you be discussing this vice presidential question with him?
I have no plans to.
What was the answer, sir?
I have no plans to.
Mr. President, do you plan to reappoint Mr. Ross to the Federal Power Commission?
I'm giving consideration to that now. We haven't made a decision on it.
Mr. President, Mr. Shambi was sworn in today as Premier of the Congo with a pledge that he would bring peace and unity. What, sir, do you believe the prospects are for that, and what will the United States do to help bring it about?
Everything that we can, and we have very anxious to make a contribution in the direction of peace whenever and wherever it's possible. And if we offer that opportunity, we'll certainly exercise it.
Mr. President, do you have any comment on Senator Goldwater's charge of fiscal irresponsibility in your administration?
I don't know what the Senator may have said about this, or all that he may have said about it, but I have been interested in the comments of some of those who are in an authoritative position to determine the fiscal responsibility of this administration and without any other motives. For instance, the American Bankers Association, which has said only yesterday that the unusual length of the current upswing could be attributed to the reduction in taxes, stability of costs and prices, which I just referred to, and the maintenance of monetary and credit conditions which preserve international confidence in the dollar. Saw a very interesting column on that and set one in some detail in the Silver Reporter yesterday that you made more of. Mr. Henry Ford, who is quoted in the Wall Street Journal, says that our economy is now healthier than it's been in many years. Part of the credit must go to the government policies, which on the whole have been well calculated to stimulate economic growth without inflation. Part of the credit must go to the recent tax cut. The National Research Bureau's report to business executives yesterday said, just about any place you look, you find evidence of the boom and signposts that point to a continuation of good times. The tax cut is still the major factor in the business boom. Ms. Porter said yesterday that the United States dollar is winning new popularity. The comeback of the dollar is an enormous tribute to our economy's inherent power and the policies of recent years. The Morgan Guaranty Trust Company, in its latest survey of economic conditions, lists this main reason for the continuing optimism, and I quote, "The excellent business news of the past month indicates that the nourishment of the tax reduction is reaching the muscles of the economy." And finally, the New York Times says, "For this has been and still is a truly phenomenal echo in the nation's economic history. The sustained advance is notable not only for its unusual longevity, but even more for the absence of excesses."
Mr. President, you have signed the bill for the International Roosevelt Campobello Memorial. Will you ask the governor of Maine to make suggestions for any one of the three American commissioners?
I haven't gone into that, and I will listen to your suggestion.
The bill suggests it, but does not direct it, I understand.
I'll be glad to talk to you about
it. Mr. President, the National Space Administration is apparently going to get considerably less funds than it asked for the space program this year. Do you think that this is going to preclude our landing on the moon this decade?
I think the funds that were requested are necessary. I hope the Congress will be adequate in its appropriation. The committee has not acted on the appropriation yet. I don't know just how to gauge the exact extent of the judgment they have exercised. I have every reason to believe that they are
sympathetic with our national objective, and I would hope that they would be as generous in their response to our request as possible.
Mr. President, can you tell us anything about your meetings with the series of meetings with the Latin American ambassadors last week and this week?
Yes, sir. We have divided up the meetings into small meetings, and they're made up of six or seven of the ambassadors from Latin American countries. In each meeting, there'll be a series of three meetings. We have had two already. In addition to the Latin American ambassadors, we have the presence of the Secretary of State, and the President, and Mr. Walt Rostow, the State Department, the CIOP group, and Mr. Tom Mann, my special assistant, Assistant Secretary for Latin America. We have an hors d'oeuvre and relax and start around the room in a conversational, informal manner, and ask the ambassador from each country, Panama, Mexico, whatever country it may be, to give us his evaluation of problems that exist between our two countries. Any suggestions that he has regarding hemispheric solidarity, any criticism he may have to make concerning actions of our agencies that, with whom he's dealing, delays that may be present, any suggestions that he could offer that should be considered for the hemisphere, particular reference to the streamlining and speed-up positions, speed-up techniques that we have brought into focus in the Latin Alliance for Progress program. Our people, Mr. Ball, Mr. Rostow, Mr. Mann, instances the President himself have not only made comments on these suggestions, but have outlined this government's views, and this government's hopes, and this government's ideals. We've talked about the foreign aid bill and the Alliance for Progress Fund that's been pending before the Senate, the action of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and the possible action of the Appropriations Committee and on our foreign aid bill. We have talked about the visits of the President from Costa Rica, and we welcome new ambassadors and, from some of the countries. We spend about an hour and a half to 2 hours near the close of the working day, 6 to 8 generally, that area, and we will be having meetings of that type from time to time, so that the executive branch can keep better informed, on the needs of the area and the hemisphere and the problems of it, and so that the ambassadors themselves can report to their government on our approaches and our procedures and our attitudes. I'm glad to report that they've been very stimulating meetings, and much good has come from them, and that the reports we've received from not only ambassadors, but heads of state in that area express appreciation for some of the steps that we have taken to centralize functions and to combine functions and to eliminate red tape and give a direct line of authority and be able to make prompt decisions.
A couple of months ago, your oratorical propensities were officially recognized by the National Forensic Society. Will this in any way influence your decision to debate your opponent in the upcoming election?
No, I don't think so.
Mr. President, on Latin America, again, what do you expect or hope would come out of this meeting of Latin America, Inter-American Foreign Ministers that's taking place here in July?
I would think that we'll have a very constructive meeting, judging from the expressions of the ambassadors and the conversation I've had with the OAS officials. I wouldn't want to prejudge the actions or deliberations in advance. I don't know of any
particular reward in the offering for so doing. I would just say let's follow the meeting closely and report accurately its deliberation.
Mr. President, how do you size up the political activities of Governor Wallace of Alabama? Is he going to, will his candidacy hurt the Democrats more than the Republicans, or the Republicans more than the Democrats, in your opinion?
I haven't conducted any study of the governor's activities or evaluated the effect of those activities. I'm not in the polling business, but I believe read this morning a poll on the front page of the Washington paper, which I think is a copy available in my office if you want to look at it.
Mr. President, Senator Goldwater has gotten into considerable controversy in the Republican Party in the last couple of days by saying that as of now, you could beat any Republican. Do you think he was right or wrong to say that?
I think the Republican Party has enough problems without my getting into them, adding to them in any way.
Mr. President, have you any comment on the Baker report just come out of the Senate Rules Committee now?
The report has been filed and no doubt will be read and fairly considered, and such action as the Senate feels is justified taking.
Mr. President, Premier Castro has recently had a long interview in which he's offering to negotiate peace with the United States. What is your attitude or your response to that?
I have seen newspaper reports on purporting to reflect his attitude. I'm much more interested in the deeds and the words, and I shall carefully watch for any actions or any deeds that would carry into effect the actions that I think would be in the best interest of the people of Cuba and people of the world. I'm much more interested in deeds than words.
Thank you, Mr. President.
From the White House in Washington, D.C., NBC News has presented the 21st News Conference of President Johnson by recording.